Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to another Foul Front podcast. Joining me, per usual, is my co-host Thomas from Hoka Outdoors. Thomas, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. Just finished doing some training with Leroy, and now getting ready to talk some ducks. So, always a good evening when you get to do those two things back to back. What have you been up to?
Well, last few days I've been watching some basketball. Actually, we've got the have it on the screen right now on the other screen. So. My bracket is completely shot, but that's okay. I'd rather, you know, I like chaos. So,
yeah.
Cool to see all them smaller teams.
I didn't even do one this year. Party foul, kind of. I typically always do one. I just forgot about it this year.
I don't think it would have mattered because yeah, I saw today everyone's bracket is busted. So.
Yeah, I've never got particularly close to getting one right. So,
no. I've gotten the champion right. Like, I picked Kansas last year, and I actually hit that, and then North Carolina a few years ago. But, you know, all along the way, I missed a bunch of teams that got upset or whatever. So,
yeah,
that's just how that goes. But in addition to that, I've been chasing snow geese basically across the state of Nebraska. You know, one hunt, I was just a stone's throw from Kansas and Missouri, and then another hunt, I wasn't too far from Wyoming. And then another hunt, I was fairly close to Colorado. So just kind of going literally all across the state, scouting and trying to get on snow geese. And I've shot a total of 2 on 6 hunts. So,
you know what I find crazy? You travel more for snow geese than you do for ducks. Like, I don't think I've ever heard of you traveling that much in that short of a time span during duck season versus.
Well, I mean, it's
for those old white bastards you're willing to drive. What, hundreds of miles?
I mean, it's a lot different style of hunting them. Like, you know, ducks, you only need a couple. Like, I have everything I need for ducks. I don't have thousands of snow goose decoys at my disposal. I actually have got some socks in the mail this week, so I have 100 socks now, and then I have 2 dozen FA full bodies, and then 5 dozen, however many silhouettes come in one of those packs. I think it's 5 dozen. Yeah, snow silhouettes. So that's okay. That's my snow goose spread, and I have 1 motion decoy that I put silhouettes on.
I bet you could do a water spread with a water hunt with that spread.
I think like late season when the juvies start coming up, might try. I've never shot a solo snow goose on an actual snow goose setup. Like, I've never done my own snow goose spread by myself and shot a snow goose. So that's, if I can get one snow goose like that, that's my goal. And if the juvies show up and it's a really nice, like, windy day when they're flying like 10 yards above the ground, it mm-hmm. could get crazy.
Yeah.
But I've yet to experience that. So I guess I had a good couple good juvie hunts last year, but not on those like really windy days. And that's when you can get the adults in too, which is all we have right now, is lots of mature snow geese, and the juvies haven't showed up yet.
Hmm. It's something I'd like to try, but over here in my neck of the woods, you basically have to go all the way to the coast to hunt them. That's the only place that we really get them in Virginia. So kind of,
I was going to say, I've seen people, I want to say it's like New York, or where the Finger Lakes, is that New York?
Yeah. Yep. That's a big snow goose staging area.
That's what I've heard.
My understanding. So. Yeah. Like Northeast North Carolina is about as far south as they go in this flyway. A bunch go down there. Some kind of transition through Virginia, but we don't really have a ton that winter in Virginia. There's one area in Virginia that will get some, and then a lot of them stay further up into Maryland and Delaware these days with as warm as it is most of the time on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's been crazy how we've had them around, like, across the state since February, but there's still like a huge snow line up in the Dakotas, so it's just kind of keeping them down around here. It'll be a year ago next weekend. It was the opening of turkey season here in Nebraska. We were shooting juvies, and that means the migration's pretty much over. Like, they're the last to, you know, leave.
Yep.
And it's still mainly adults, and they'll fly north one day, and then here comes another snowstorm, and then they move back south. So just a crazy, crazy weather year all together. But
yeah. Yeah, I was checking. They do that, and I'm blanking on the name of it right now, but it's like the satellites that show bird movement. I think it's through the Cornell Bird Lab. And I was looking at that, and it showed that most of the snows at this point were up in Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska. So I'm guessing those juvies probably aren't too far south of you, because I think they have pushed out of Arkansas for the most part by now.
Man, I sure hope so. And all it's going to take is like a couple days of a nice south wind and like 50, 60, 70 degree weather, and I think we'll have them. But
yep.
Yeah. I'm anticipating them, you know. I'm ready. And the snow goose season here, it only goes to like the first or second week of April, so we don't have a lot of time left. So hopefully they'll make their way up before then, but
Have you seen it before where y'all snow goose season is closed and y'all still have huntable numbers of them around?
I've seen, so there's like a split halfway in the state or so, and the western part ends like a week early.
Oh.
And I personally haven't seen it, but apparently you'll get those, they call them like isolated juvie pockets that'll still hang around. And I guess after the season is closed, there's been some that show up, but I don't think it's a typical occurrence, or it happens enough that I don't know. I can't personally say that I've seen it. So,
gotcha.
I mean, they were gone several weeks before season closed across the state last year, mm-hmm. for the most part.
Yeah, I guess y'all's turkeys probably haven't really got started yet, have they?
Actually heard some gobbles last week setting up snow goose decoys.
Really?
So they're start. I mean, they'll gobble. I mean, I hear them gobble in the fall too. So that, I guess that doesn't really mean they're, you know, getting fired up, but I don't know. I'm ready for turkey season, but since we got our season, you know, knocked down to two, which I was glad to see, because turkey numbers are crashing all across the country, but still excited to get back out there. I just love sitting out in the roost early and, well, not in the roost, I guess, but close. It'd be hard. It's hard to get up on the roost.
Like, buster.
Yeah, I just sit up underneath them with a headlight. They don't care.
Well, you can shoot them with a rifle in Virginia. So, I mean, in Virginia, I guess it's not legal to shoot a rifle up in the air. But, I mean, you can do some pretty what would be considered, I think, sketchy in a lot of other places is legal in Virginia for turkeys.
Yeah, so like you can't shoot them off the roost here in Nebraska unless they're, or it's like you can't shoot a turkey out of a tree unless it's like a half hour after sunrise, which most of them are down. Like I can't think of one time I've seen a turkey in a tree after sunrise unless something was messed up with it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I wouldn't want to shoot a turkey out of a tree anyways. Like I, you know, I want to see them all strutted up and drumming and just come. That's part of the fun, but it is fun.
That's
listening.
That's all of the fun with turkeys. I mean, I love eating wild turkey too, but I mean, they put on the best show in the game.
Yeah. They're fun. It's just a fun hunt, all around. And we get wood ducks that'll fly up and down the creek. So you hear the wood ducks whistle, see some deer. Usually it's just, I don't know. It's a surreal experience, especially once everything starts greening up, and then maybe you'll find some morels and just all those good springtime activities. You'll catch a crappie in the afternoon.
Yeah. It's just a fun time of year to be in the woods. I was actually looking for morels yesterday and then today. It's been that warm here in Virginia. I mean, we've had highs in the 70s, consistent highs in the 60s for about the past 2 weeks. So I still haven't heard a gobble. I can't believe it. As much as I've been out in the woods working with Leroy, especially early in the mornings, I don't know if they're, I'm guessing it's just because we're loud, you know, when I'm working with them, and probably I'm spooking them before I'd ever hear them. But yeah, it seems like everything's starting to green up here. We should be finding mushrooms soon, and we still have a few weeks until turkey season, but they should be firing up here before long.
So is it just one turkey in Virginia there?
We're still three.
Holy cow.
I mean, I'm sure there are people across the state who would say they've seen a decline, but we have it. I feel like Virginia hasn't been one of the states that's really raised the alarm bell. Like the states that I've heard the most about have been Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee. A lot of people were talking about last year, Nebraska. I know Corey went on a road trip down to Nebraska last year, and he said they saw very few turkeys and they saw more raccoons than he's ever seen before in any other state. Missouri, yeah. Like a lot of those kind of southern and midwestern states seem to be having problems, but here in Virginia we haven't really seen it yet. I know up in Minnesota they have incredible numbers. They haven't really seen a decline at all, so I don't know what it is, but it definitely seems like it's more southern and midwestern focused at the moment.
I think it's a kind of a death by a thousand cuts kind of deal. I mean, there's a lot of different theories out there. You know, predation, loss of habitat. There's even seed treatment, possibly. There's all kinds of theories.
X factor that I've kind of had my eye on, and I have nothing scientific or no facts to back it up. I will say the anecdotal evidence that I've seen is that the sandhill crane numbers in some places where there's really heavy ag around where they nest. Like I was in Wisconsin this past year and was talking to a couple people, and they said that the sandhill cranes have had really bad reproduction in Wisconsin the last couple of years. And obviously there's a good bit of ag in Wisconsin. So I do wonder if maybe it's something pesticide or seed related, because seems like areas where birds and ag are mixing can be, or anecdotally are kind of hot spots for some issues.
Yeah. And we don't want to definitely suggest anything without any scientific evidence to back it up, because in Nebraska, one of the prevailing rumors is all the pheasants got killed off because the turkeys killed all the pheasants off. So
really
there, you'll hear people say that, and it's just like, no. Correlation does not equal causation.
Yes,
this was back when turkey numbers were very high, but the pheasants numbers were going down, which also miraculously correlated with corn prices being record highs at the time, and all that, at, you know, all that previously unfarmed ground tape being going into production and small grains going by the wayside in favor of corn and soybean monocultures.
Yep. So, yeah, and I think I've heard a lot of, I guess not a lot of stuff, but I read a couple things last year where people were suggesting that the neonic stuff that they coat seeds with could be a problem for turkeys. But my thinking would be more that it's just the general pesticide use that we see nowadays. And just that, you know, when a turkey or young sandhill crane is just out of the egg, they're eating insects. That's almost 100% of their diet. They're trying to get that high protein diet so that they can grow quick. And when you have less insects on the landscape, it's going to cause those birds to have a little bit tougher time growing. And I think really it's like those first 10 days for a lot of, for those turkeys and sandhill cranes when they're really the most vulnerable. So as soon as they can, like, especially for a turkey, hop up to that first branch on a tree, it makes their life a heck of a lot easier.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just so much things, you know, that, so many things that could go wrong for a young turkey, a young duck. We could talk about this on a whole nother podcast too, because it is an interesting topic, just, you know, reproduction and survivability and just general population dynamics. But we better get to the topic of the day before we just keep going on.
I'm doing my best to sidetrack us.
That's all right. So on the Fowl Front podcast group on Facebook, we had a request to do this. And if you guys have any requests for podcasts you want to hear in the future, drop them in there. I think we've got between 2,000 and 3,000 people there now. So it's growing fairly significantly and getting some good activity in there. Always could use more though. But we've had a couple people have had them message me on Instagram and message in the group, and they want to hear a topic about, or a podcast about, water swatting. So I figured we'd just do a deep dive, flesh this thing out, and go from there. I'm sure this has been hit on by numerous other podcasts. I know I've made YouTube videos about it. I think you have too, Thomas.
Yeah.
So as the professional water swatter in the Flyways Collective, I'm just kidding. But I figured we'd talk about it, kind of give go do a deep dive on water swatting.
That's a title that I will wear proudly. No shame in that title at all.
Yeah. So I guess let's just start from the basics. Water swatting, ground pounding, sluicing, whatever you want to call it. There's a bunch of different. See, I've heard Arkansas is shooting them right as they are about, or right as they jump up. Like they're.
I'm sure some people will tell you that, but I think the majority of times it's used, it's probably used to talk about a water swat.
Okay, well, see, there's one that I guess I didn't associate with, but there's all kinds of different names on it. Basically, it is shooting a sitting duck or goose, typically on the water, ground pound, obviously, if it's in a field or something, or on dry land. But there is a lot of, in my opinion, unnecessary controversy around this. Contrary to some people's beliefs, it is not illegal in any U.S. state. Other countries I cannot attest to, but there is no law in the United States that prohibits water swatting for ducks and geese. There might be something for upland birds or doves or, yeah, stuff like that. But
I think water swatting is probably just about tied with shooting out of a boat that you're paddling out of for the thing that most people falsely think is federally illegal. Like, I've heard a lot of people say that they think water swatting is federally illegal, and that also it's federally prohibited to shoot out of like a kayak that you're paddling, or, you know, a boat that's anchored or something like that. For some reason, those two things are, I don't know how they got around, but I've heard it out of quite a few people.
Well, see, I could get the kayak one, because it is illegal to shoot out of a moving boat that was moving because of motorized conveyance. So if you had a motor, and if you killed that motor, and then like you're still technically moving,
yeah,
because of that motor, that's illegal. But yeah, so I could see maybe how they got confused on that. But the water swatting, I have no clue. I don't upland hunt near enough to quote the law here, but I want to say there's something on the books in Nebraska about like shooting a pheasant on the ground or maybe a quail. So,
I gotcha. Yeah, that would make sense. Because I'll
have to double check, but
I think that's something I remember Elliot talking about a lot in some of his early videos. Because the first season that Elliot was making videos, they thought water swatting was illegal. And that's because they grew up upland hunting. And I think what they said was that it was illegal to shoot upland birds on the ground back then. So they assumed that waterfowl were the same way.
Yeah, I guess I could kind of see the reasoning behind upland birds because, you know, typically they're in thick cover, or you're going to drive down the road and see them in a thicket after a snowstorm. So basically you're road hunting poaching, I guess I should say, not really road hunting. Or you're shooting them into thick cover and you don't know what else is behind there. So you might be shooting hens, could shoot a dog, just not ideal. So I can see the reasoning behind that. And then, you know, if that leads to confusion on waterfowl, if you're you start up as an upland hunter, I could get that. But it is, water swatting for waterfowl is not illegal in any state. So just put that to bed right now.
Well, I guess it's still illegal in Hawaii, isn't it?
Do they have water? I don't even think they have a waterfowl season in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's the...
Okay. That's Calvin Jim. Okay, I got you. Although they could, I would love to shoot a nene, but
they get some like pintails and stuff that stop out there. You know, some of the ones they get lost migrating across the Pacific. So I'm sure you could duck hunt out there, but I think
we'll have to get a guy from Hawaii to give us a waterfowl update on a future podcast.
I think you're right. They can't do any hunting out there because they have that protected goose, but I bet you could find huntable numbers out there.
I'm gonna reach out. I have some people I know that have like been on stationed out to Hawaii, I believe.
Okay.
So I don't think they can waterfowl hunt out there. I'm pretty sure they can't. I believe it's the only state where there's not a waterfowl season. But
yeah, there's
ask
no
them what there. You can. You know, we can do a podcast on that because we are planning a, you know, hunt podcast tour, interview people from across different states. So if you want to do that, we'll put a quick plug out for that. Either message myself or Thomas, or join the Fowl Front podcast group and, you know, drop it down. Let us know a little bit about you. I've got, I think, Ohio and Iowa and Wisconsin already claimed for, and it's okay. We can do multiple ones too. So I'm not really too concerned about that. But yep. Back on track here, because Thomas keeps derailing it. I guess we should probably start with, why is water swatting looked down upon? Like, where does this negative mentality to water swatting start with? And although there's not a concrete definitive answer, the best guess is it goes all the way back to the market hunting days where the guys went out with punt guns. Sometimes in the dead of night, sometimes they just basically throw whatever they could in these 4-gauge, 2-gauge, whatever you want to call them, shotguns that were mounted on the front of boats and just sluiced however many waterfowl back in the day, just giant rafts, and took out huge numbers of waterfowl at a time. And the negative connotation comes from the guys that were in the duck clubs at the time, the traditionalists, the wing shooters. They believe, you know, shooting a duck or a goose on the wing is the right way, the only way. So that they got that negative mentality. And then going off that, the market hunters did decimate waterfowl populations for a long, long time. So there could be something, you know, that negative connotation as well. So that's the most likely theory I've heard. And I could see it. It sounds good to me. I mean, I don't know where else people would have got a negative connotation for water swatting other than maybe, you know, they personally don't want to do it.
Yep. And I'm going to give a super quick plug if I can find the book real quick. There's a really, really good book about, here it is, right? Is this it? Nope. Shoot. Dang it. I didn't mean to derail the conversation. I'll have to. Oh, The Last of the Market Hunters is a book. I'm sure you can find it anywhere you find books, but it's a great read if you're wanting to kind of get a better idea about those market hunting days and really the reality of what life as a market hunter looked like and what the industry was based around.
Okay. Yeah. And I'd never heard of that. I'll have to check that out. That does sound interesting.
I can send it to you.
Yeah, do that.
It's a pretty quick read. I think it's only 150, 200 pages. And mainly based around Market Hunting in the Chesapeake Bay, but really, really good book. I'd say must read for every waterfowl hunter.
Sweet. So check that out. But yeah, so that's basically this mindset that still carries on in some today about, you know, being negative towards water spotting, because Thomas and I both make waterfowl videos. You shoot waterfowl one time sitting on the water, and I don't usually do it. I think I can count on one hand the number of times I do it, typically in a year, and it's just for different instances, and I'll elaborate on this more towards the end. But there's always that one guy, water swatting, SMH, or, you know, whatever. And then there's also the other guys, like, why don't you just shoot him on the water instead of yelling at him? I just can't please everyone. So
I got a quick question for you, because
okay.
I think it's something that's really interesting about this debate is that how social media has played into it. Because I think social media blows a lot of these kind of debates or controversies, kind of blows them out of proportion in terms of how much disagreement there would be between actual waterfowl hunters. Like, it's really easy for someone to get on a keyboard and write and tell you you shouldn't water swap, but the amount of people who would sit in the blind with you and tell you that, I think, is much, much lower. So I want to ask you, has there ever been a time where you've been hunting with someone and you water swatted a bird and they said, wait, we don't do that, or you shouldn't do that again, or something along those lines?
No. No, there hasn't been. I'm trying to think.
Was it something that was kind of frowned upon by your dad or other people who were your hunting mentors growing up?
No, not really. And granted, you know, my dad wasn't a huge waterfowler. I mean, he did it some, but he was more big game hunter. Shoot, the first goose I shot at was sitting on the ground, and I missed.
Oh, yeah. First duck I shot at was on the water, I'm pretty sure.
But, you know, it was just something. It's kind of, it's my own personal preference. Is I like to shoot them in the air. That's how I like to do it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I guess we can get into the crux of this argument, basically nowadays, is ethical versus sporting. You know, the people that water swat argue that it's more ethical because you're shooting at a mostly stationary target, i.e. like kind of like turkey hunting. You're going to shoot them in the head. You shouldn't shoot at a running turkey. Now, granted, there's a big difference between a duck and a turkey, but you would say the easier shot, quote, you know, in quotes, would probably be the stationary target, especially with a shotgun, shooting them in the head versus on the wing. So that in turn would lead to people saying it is more ethical. And ethics varies upon the individual. I think there's a loose definition of ethics as waterfowlers that we can all agree upon, but then it varies to varying degrees from there. Like, there's people that say hunting with a 28 gauge is unethical, or hunting with a 410 for teal is unethical, or, you know, that if you're competent with that, then it's ethical. And, you know, I would disagree. So that is just an example of a disagreement in ethics between myself and another individual. The same thing with water swatting versus flying. I don't think you can argue it's more ethical to shoot them flying. Granted, you might have a little bigger target while they're in flight, just surface area, there's more vitals exposed, versus like if you happen to miss them shooting like at their head, you're having to shoot through the wings to even, and especially on a goose, if you're water swatting and you don't hit the head, you might not. I would hope you can hit a sitting goose, but I've missed a mallard before sitting on the water, so I'm not gonna give anyone any flack for that. But
yeah, if you haven't missed a bird on the water, then you probably haven't water swatted enough, in my opinion. One thing that I've heard a lot of people say is that when a bird's sitting on the water, its vitals are under the water, and so it's actually less of an exposed target than a flying bird. And my kind of rebuttal to that, I don't really think that's necessarily wrong. I think it's a little bit misguided, because the only way you're going to kill a duck or a goose absolutely stone dead is either a brain shot, a spine shot, or a heart shot. If you shoot it through the lungs, I think most of the time they're going to, you know, the bird would get up and fly away and die within sight of you. But I think that lung shot is the one we see most of the time, where you shoot a bird, it flies off for 30 seconds and falls dead out of the sky.
Yep.
So there's really two out of the three vital areas that you have to hit a bird with one pellet or more to kill them stone dead are exposed above the waterline when you're shooting at a sitting duck. I really don't think that kind of heart, lungs, liver, whatever, all the internal organs are as important as hitting either the brain or the spine, which with the right pattern density, I think is almost 100% shot inside the right ranges. And I think there's almost kind of levels to water swatting. And it depends obviously on what choke you're using and your shot setup. But I know, like for me, if I'm shooting at a bird sitting on the water within 20 yards, I'm going to literally aim at its head. And that's 100% probability shot. Like that bird, there's no way it's going to get up and fly off. My pattern's too tight at that range, you know, 20 to 30 yards. Now, you know, you might see that bird get up one out of every 10 times. You know, you just don't get that lucky brain or spine shot because your pattern's a little more spread out there. And then 30 to 40 yards, I think is starting to push it with water swatting. Even with a completely open shot with no brush or anything, I've had, I'd say probably a good handful of birds that I've water swatted at that range where you cover them up with the pattern and they still get up and fly off. Cause you know, obviously you didn't get that brain or the spine shot. You still hit the bird, but you didn't get that vital shot. So I'd say my water swatting range personally is like 30 yards and in, but you know, if you're using a tighter choke or you're shooting bismuth number fives or number sixes, I would think you'd be able to reach out there a little bit further with more confidence.
Yeah, so I'm glad you kind of brought that up. Different situations in which to water swat, and that is where I fall into. You know, if I have the choice, I'm gonna shoot them on the flushing shot because that's just personal preference. There are a few exceptions to that. Number one, if there's like a species limit. So, for example, across most of the country, the scop limit is one. If you've ever had a flock of scop come in, you know they're usually tight, compact, and there's not like a straggler very often that you can pick out, and they dump in without giving you a lot of warning.
Yep.
So I have no problem waiting for the scop. Like, well, usually I don't have to wait because they just dump in and land in my decoys whenever, you know, they're around. I'll wait, and I'll just wait till one separates itself. Usually a nice drake is what I'm trying to wait for, and I'll water swat it when it's far away from the group, so I don't accidentally collateral another one and, you know, be over limit. I would not like to do that. You know, I don't want to have a ticket. I don't want to do that. So that's one situation. Another situation is, I can think of one, like I was teal hunting last year and I was set up in a stick blind I built. I had a shooting window in front of me, and that's about the only, you know, that's where I was planning on the birds to come and land. That's where my decoy spread was. And once you know it, a blue-winged teal lands on the side of me. And this was after I already had one that I tried to shoot on the side, and I did not leave a shooting window there. I had a stick that would impede my swing. Well, this bird basically landed in that same spot after missing the other one. I was like, okay, I'm going to just shoot this bird on the water because, you know, I'm out there, and he didn't come right to my decoy spread, but he was still 25, 30 yards. So, you know, I just water swatted him. No big deal. I didn't have an issue with it. The third reason I will water swat is typically on divers. Once again, you cannot get them to leave your decoys. They will swim out of range, but like you get a canvasback or a redhead or something dump in, unless you start walking out at them, they will not get up. They would rather just swim out. So I'll give them, I usually, you know, I'll give them a couple, like three snaps. I like to put my hand up and snap. Seems for whatever reason to get them up, or I'll yell, hey, not hey bird, hey, like Jordan always likes to say. I don't do that.
Okay. I think that's false. I definitely have heard you say hey bird, hey before.
I say hey, or I'll be like, get up, you know. Anymore though, I usually put my one hand up and I'll snap my fingers, or I'll just have my gun, both hands on my gun, and I just start, if I'm like hunting in cattails, I'll just walk right towards them, and that usually will get them to flush. So that's how I do that.
Yeah. I see, and that I have just a different outlook on birds that have landed in the decoys, because I've missed them too many times when they get up and fly away. Like the amount of times early on in my first couple years of waterfowl hunting where I had a bird come in, land, you know, when you're really new to waterfowl hunting, you're slow to get the gun up. So I'd, you know, be slow to get the gun up, bird flushes, and I'd shoot the bird's tail feathers off and it flies away. So that right there really early on just turned me off to trying to flush birds back up, or giving them the opportunity to flush back up, just because that going away shot, you know, sometimes it's a great shot. If the bird is kind of going straight up and you can get a good headshot, but if that bird's flying straight away from you, a lot of times you're really only left with shooting it up the butt and hopefully breaking a wing.
Yeah. That, and that, you know, that's a bad shot. Depending at the range, it still can be lethal, but if it's, you know, if it's pushing range, that's a terrible shot. Shoot them in the back, shoot them in the butt, because that bird will probably get hit. But like you said, unless you break a wing, you're not hitting any vitals. The heads at that point is protected, and all the other vitals are up front. You're just shooting out at the back. You might break a leg. You're not gonna bring that bird down. You're kind of, it's bad for the resource.
Yeah.
So for that reason, you know, that's why some people are against the flushing shots. And I can understand that. But you also mentioned that sometimes you can miss those flushing shots. And that's kind of leads to the sporting aspect. Like, you're giving that bird a fighting chance to get out of the decoy spread alive. And, you know, if maybe you don't even take that shot on the flushing shot. You know, I've had people say, if a bird lands, if it lands in your decoy spread, it gets a free pass to fly away.
I've heard that too.
And that is like one step past the whole water swatting argument. And if that's your rule in the blind, that's absolutely fine. I mean, hunt however you want to within, you know, legality and ethically, that general rule of ethics that I previously mentioned. But we don't need to boil it down to your specific definition of ethics and say, if other people do that, I don't care if people water swat. Okay. And we can get all into this a little later, but I would rather see everyone water swat than anyone sky bus. I mean, it's better for the resource. And you can argue, oh, is this shoot them on the flush? I don't care. But I'd rather see that than anyone sky bust. And if there shouldn't be, I mean, we should all be in agreement as waterfowl hunters on that topic. Like that's what kind of what I'm saying, like this whole broad definition of ethics. And then you can water it down to the individual's definition of ethics.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the waterfowling world would be a lot happier place if we were all arguing over water swatting or not, based because we all had birds in our decoys, instead of, you know, in some public areas, it's just everybody's mad at each other because everybody's shooting at birds that are 60 or 70 yards high. So, yeah, if we all had birds in our decoys all day long and, you know, we were arguing about that back at the parking lot, that'd be a lot better situation, I think.
Yeah, and so what I like to do, especially with a group, you know, I hunt with some guys, they don't care. They'll water swat. And some of them aren't the best shots, so I'm okay with them water swatting. But I'm not gonna point any fingers out here. But so if a couple of ducks come in and they'll you know, it's kind of understood at this point where they'll shoot one on the water and then I'll shoot anything that jumps up. Just because that saves me having to yell. And there's also been times where, you know, I've been hunting alone and I'll try to get them up. But on those windy days, it's hard to get birds to leave sometimes. So, you know, I'll water swat and I'll miss, and then I'll shoot them after they're in the air. So if anyone wants to yell at me about water swatting, I'm like, that was just the warning shot. So, but I prefer to shoot them in the air. Like I said, there's very specific scenarios that I'm not upset to water swap, though.
I just don't like the taste of blood in my duck. Like, if I, and I'm sure when I'm talking about water swatting, like the water swats that I'm most proud of are those ones like inside of 20 yards where you just get that perfect headshot and there's no pellets in the meat. So that's where I'm like just a water. I've almost become a water swatting purist. Like when we land birds in the decoys and they flush back up and I see one just get pillowcased at 10 yards, it makes me cringe a little bit because I'm just thinking about how that bird could have just been, you know, a perfect pelletless breast if it had been shot in the head.
Well, sounds like you got too many pellets in your gun, Thomas. Might need to drop yeah. down a gauge. But no, I can understand that. And see, that would be an advantage, I would say, to water swatting is, especially on geese, you know, they got, you know, even if you yell at them so their head sticks up, you've got all that target without any collateral down in the breast, down in the meat. So I would say if there's any advantages to water swatting, it's less likelihood of pellets in the meat. Also, it's probably easier. I don't think anyone would argue with me that it is generally easier to hit a stationary target versus a moving target flying. And for new hunters, it makes duck ID that much easier too. They don't have to rush their shots and maybe take out a coot or take out a bird you're not supposed to. So you can let it set there. You can kind of, you know, identify the characteristics. And then if you find out, oh, hey, that is a duck, I can shoot that, you know, go from there. So I think there are definitely advantages to water swatting, particularly for new hunters. Personally, I don't see why this has to be such a controversy. I mean, I get it's the traditionalist versus other people, and it seems like in every niche hobby and everything, there is that traditionalist group. You know, traditional bow hunters versus compound bows versus crossbows versus rifle hunters. I mean, that's just in the deer hunting world. I'm sure in every hobby, there's someone who, you know, there's some traditionalist group or some, they have one thought process and the other thought process isn't wrong or is totally wrong to them.
Yep.
But yeah, I just don't see why there's so much time spent chiding people for this when it ultimately doesn't matter. You're out there duck hunting. If they want to shoot a duck on the water or in the air, who cares? Like I said, let them get them close. Let them shoot them close. Let them take high percentage shots. I don't think anyone would be opposed if I said, hey, is it, would you as a waterfowler rather see people take high percentage shots versus low percentage shots, cripple game, and possibly ruin hunting for everyone else in the marsh and across the area because of sky busting and educating birds? I don't think any waterfowler is going to be like, no, I'd rather, you know, just have 10 guys and unload on a flock and maybe drop one. I don't think anyone's going to say that. I would hope that no one says that.
I think you're maybe overestimating the.
And I guess
it, in general, it, but I agree with your point. I think you're right. I think 9 out of 10 people for sure would say they agree with that.
That's fair. I mean, there's always that one guy's like, well, no, I'd rather have long, you know, long distance shots so I can show off my shooting abilities and all this other stuff. Like, no, like, okay, yeah, he just wants to be opposed to the general public or the general consensus contrarian. That's what I was looking for. But yeah,
so I have a question. Would you be opposed to water swatting coots? Like if you saw someone paddling around on your local lake just shooting up rafts of coots, would that be something that you would take, I don't want to say take offense to, because I don't think you'd take offense to it. Something you would see as problematic.
Why are they shooting the coots?
I don't know. I mean,
are they shooting right into the raft? Okay, so there's some variables here. So I want to pat
across the country, right?
I believe so. Just for simplicity's sake, if it's not, we're going to say it is 15 coots a day across the country. That's what we're going to say it is. I don't quote me on that. Check with your own local DNR regulations. But we're going to say it is in this scenario. Okay, so this person's out on a kayak with their shotgun and they're water spotting coots. Are they shooting at an individual coot that's kind of on the periphery of the raft, or are they just pile driving them right in the right in the middle of the raft? And also, why are they shooting the coots? What is their motivation?
Well, surprisingly enough, this is actually an anecdotal question. Like, I've seen this happen before. I didn't ask them why they were shooting the coots. We were headed somewhere else, but it was a group of guys in kayaks who had surrounded a raft of coots and were water swatting them. I mean, some of the coots were getting up and flying, but they were, just mopping up a bunch of coots. So I'd assume that they were going to eat them. I don't know. Maybe they were going to pile them on a tailgate and take a picture, but I would assume if someone's going to go out and shoot a bunch of coots, it'd be to eat them.
That was the answer I was hoping for. Not that, because they predate duck nests. I absolutely hate that answer. Like, people act like they're helping duck populations by shooting a coot. No. That's a whole nother topic, but I absolutely hate that answer for why people shoot coots. Why do you shoot coots? Oh, well, we're helping the duck nest because Delta Waterfowl put out a video of them eating a canvasback nest years ago. Okay, I don't want to get on this topic. I don't want to get on my soapbox for this.
Has it been disproven that they are a significant predator of duck nests, though?
I mean, even so.
I'm not saying that it's a reason to just go out and massacre coots and not eat them, but
that's my point. Like, don't act like you're helping duck populations by killing coots. Like, don't use that as your justification. If you want to kill coots and utilize them for their meat or feathers or whatever you want to do with them, that's fine, but don't say, I'm doing this just to help the duck populations. Duck populations vary on two things: habitat and nesting conditions. Those are the two main drivers, okay? I want to reiterate this point as much as I can, because it's the same issue with, like, shooting hens, all that good stuff. Those are the two main drivers. If by the logic that the people that shoot coots to help duck populations, if we go by that logic, then I'm every largemouth bass I catch, every pike, every muskie, I'm chucking up on the shore because they eat ducklings. So I'm going to help save all the ducks by killing every largemouth bass I catch. No, that's not how that works. Okay? So I want to put that out there, because I don't want people just killing for a misguided reason. Like, if you're going to utilize them, if you're going to eat them, great. But don't just go out there and kill coots just because you think it's going to help duck populations, because it's not. Sorry, well, I derailed it this time, but
you're good. No, that was very passionate. You just want to protect Clarence. I understand.
Yes, I like seeing Clarence out in the marsh with me, and I like running my coot raft because hardly anyone else does. But
wouldn't it make your coot rafts more effective if they had less natural coots to compete with?
But if there's no coots, then the ducks wouldn't know what a coot is.
Good point. It'd probably be really good for one season, and then it would not be good anymore.
Exactly. But to answer, I guess, to go back to your question, if they're shooting right into the rafts, I would not condone that. Because you never know how many of them birds are going to be flying away with shot. And you see ducks raft up, and people will do that. Well, it's even like jump shooting. You know, you jump shoot and you just try to shoot right into the densest, like some people do, like on snow geese, they'll try to shoot right into the wad and you just let it rip. And then how many of those birds fly away with shot in them that you don't know about? I mean, there's Canada geese I've shot, and I know it's like, I'll be hunting solo, I'll be using my copper plated bismuth, and I'll be skinning, and I'll find like BBs in there or other shot. Wasn't it you that found like a rifle?
We pulled 22s out of two different geese this year.
Yeah. So, that's highly illegal, but
yeah, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was a little disappointed. Like, if you're going to shoot at a goose with a 22, it needs to have a band on it at least. Come on.
No, we're not even going to condone that. I'm not even going to condone that, because I don't want to influence any younger listeners. But I'm sure people do that too. I mean, there's all kinds of highly illegal. I would say that's highly unethical as well to being highly illegal.
Oh, but, yeah. I mean, yeah, breaking multiple laws there. And yeah, I mean, there's been when I did a podcast with Ethan Mathias a while back, and he was telling me a story about how they were snow goose hunting in Arkansas, one of his buddies, and some dude rolled down the road with a 22 and opened up on their snow goose spread and caused a huge, big kind of issue. Luckily, no one got shot, but the guy got in a lot of trouble.
There, I want to say it was in Canada years ago. Some guy shot at a Canada. It was a guy in a layout blind in a Canada goose spread, and he got shot and died because some guy was driving down the road and shot at it with a rifle.
Wow.
Just stupid, stupid, stupid crap. I can't believe, like, going back to kind of what you mentioned a long time ago already, was Virginia allows rifles for turkey. That just seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, luckily there hasn't been any big accidents or any accidents involving rifles that I've heard of. We've had some accidents in the state involving turkey hunting, but all of it's been shotgun related.
That's
the last few years. But yeah, I mean, it's not a common thing from what I've heard. You know, I've seen a couple of people using them on public land, and I've seen a couple of Facebook posts in, you know, 3 or 4 years, but it's definitely not a common thing.
I would never want to do that personally. Like, part of turkey hunting for me is seeing how close you can get them. So I want them, like, in my lap, basically. You know, I shot one at, like, he was probably 3 yards, 5 yards tops. He was right there, and that was awesome. Like, you hear so, like, you see the, like, minute details of how they move their feathers. Like,
yep.
Almost reminds you, like, one of them velociraptors from Jurassic Park, like, how they can move their feathers, like, their scales and stuff. Like, it's so cool. And then all the little vocalizations they make at that range, it is crazy. So, to miss out on that, like, this whole TSS revolution in turkey hunting and, we're way off topic now, but
yeah, that's a rabbit trail that goes for a long, long ways.
And then we can hit on that because I have,
and yeah,
that's our next one. We're gonna hit on reaping and turkey hunting and all this stuff because I've got some opinions that we'll talk about here. But you know, we'll save that for another day.
What else do we need to flesh out on water swatting here? Because we're closing in on an hour, so I think that'd probably
be
a good place to start wrapping it up.
I mean, we talked about the history, we talked about ethical versus sporting. Flushing them's probably considered more sporting, especially from the traditional standpoint, ethics. You could argue it's probably most ethical to water swat. I don't think anyone or most people would probably agree with that. Hitting a stationary target versus moving, probably more ethical. Better shot opportunity, once again, kind of varies on the individual, but we're leaning water swatting. Wing shooters versus meat hunters, that's kind of what's going to dictate your outlook on water swatting. And yep. Then less pellets in the meat, that's a pro for water swatting. So I guess really, to close this out, it shouldn't be a controversy. Like, it seems like a pointless controversy to me. It seems like a needless controversy. Who cares? If someone's water swatting, let them water swat. I could absolutely not care any less. I would rather, like I said, and I'm going to reiterate it, and I'll reiterate it again and again and again, I'd rather people water swat than sky bust. I'd rather people take an ethical shot, even if you think a flushing shot's more ethical for whatever reason over water swatting. It's way more ethical to do either one of those two than it is to sky bust.
Yep.
So I think that should be the real controversy. We should talk about sky busting. We should talk about taking ethical shots. You know, those should be the things that we are actually concerned about, not some kid or some guy or some other person shooting ducks on the water, especially on public land. If it's someone who's neighboring you, let them shoot every duck on the water. I don't care if they shoot 6 for 6 on the water and then get out of there, then I can have a, you know, the rest of the marsh to myself if we're the only two groups out there or something. So it shouldn't be a controversy is basically what I'm saying. Do whatever, however you want to be, but don't put the pressure on other people because they're water swatting. If you wanted like some friendly chiding, absolutely. You know, it's like the same deal with shooting a hen. You know, you just call them a hen shooter, give them a little crap, but
yep.
It's not mean. It's not mean spirited. It's, you're just teasing them. So yep. it shouldn't be a controversy. If you want to water swat. If you don't. If someone else does, who cares?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And to kind of loop back to that question I asked you earlier about, have you ever had someone tell you in the blind? I've actually only ever had it happen once. It was my first year waterfowl hunting. I had this little wood duck spot, and I'd gone there probably 3 or 4 times. And I was talking to someone on the old duck hunting forums and invited them out to the spot. They came out with me. We throw out a little spread. It's just a awesome little cypress kind of swamp channel, but we're hunting a hole that's like 20 yards wide. So first pair comes in there, lands at like 10 yards. I water swatted one of them, and the dude lost his crap. Like, I thought he seemed like a super cool dude up to that point. You know, I met him at the truck. We dropped our kayaks in, paddle in there. And I'm, you know, thinking kind of same as before, you know, the other hunts in there. This is my first season waterfowl hunting. I had at least one water swat each morning because those wood ducks come screaming through those cypress trees, and I'm still super slow. And that dude just lost his stuff, and it just threw me for such a loop because I'd never seen anything like it before. You know, it was completely normal for me to water swat at that point. So just don't be that guy. You know, it didn't ruin waterfowl hunting for me. I was right back out there the next weekend, but yeah, that guy definitely put a big damper on that morning for me, because then I felt like I was treading on glass the rest of the morning trying not to piss him off. So just don't be that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it boils down to this: if you don't want to water swat, don't water swat. Who cares if someone else does? If people just worry about their own selves, the world will be a better place. Honestly, it doesn't matter whatever topic we're talking about. Worry about your own dang self. It's not that complicated. But particularly in water swatting in this case. So,
yeah, I wish I had been a little bit older when that had happened, because if that happened these days, you know, I would just have an adult conversation with someone and be like, why do you have such a problem with this? Like, this is how I see it. How do you see it? But at that point, you know, I'm a 16-year-old kid meeting an older guy we're out in the middle of the woods. I'm like, oh, this guy probably knows more than I do. I should listen to what he says.
On that, and you do raise an interesting point there too, is to have a discussion. If someone is that opposed to water swatting, have a discussion about why. It's either going to be their upbringing, or if it's their preference, then that's, you know, that's their preference, but they shouldn't be pushing that onto you, because it's not any more unethical. It's not unethical. It's not unethical to shoot them flushing. It's not unethical to shoot them on the water. But they, you know, it, like, we, I want to hammer this home. It's personal preference. That's all it is. There shouldn't be a controversy. I can't not state that enough. So, but I think we've fleshed this topic out enough. And if there's ever a request for another water spotting,
we will refer
video or podcast.
Yeah. Cause this is a topic that, like, I feel like we've touched on at least as like a rabbit trail or something else. And at least probably half of our podcast so far. So it's good to finally flesh this one out. And yeah, hopefully, I think we need to mix it up a little bit. These like controversies that shouldn't be controversies, they're fun podcasts, but
oh,
I feel like we could start beating a dead horse if we keep on doing them.
I've got one, and we can do another podcast on this altogether, but it's if you could change one thing in waterfowl hunting, what would you change?
We did. We answered this question when we did the podcast with Jordan last fall.
I know, but we haven't done it on this one. So, does anyone listen to the Duck Gun podcast?
Wait, no, we did that on ours. We had Jordan as a guest on.
Oh, okay, never
on mind. Here. Yeah. Oh, my voice is cracking up.
I think it could be a good topic to talk about once again.
No, it is. Yeah, I feel like, honestly, we should do more than one, though. Like, it should be what would be 5 or 10 changes that you would make to waterfowl hunting. But yeah, that might be one more like one that'd be better for like closer to next season. I think
actually, season... no, we're, I'm going to, so I'm going to throw this out. Fowl Front Waterfowl Podcast Group. What would, if you could change, I don't know if we asked this already. We're going to make a post though. or you're going to drop it in the Foul Front Waterfowl Podcast group on Facebook. If you're not there, join it, and you can chime in on this as well. If you could change one thing in waterfowl hunting, what would it be?
That'd be if we do a post along with it, it'd be interesting to go through a bunch of different.
I'm curious what everyone thinks, you know, like, cause it's one thing for you and I to sit like, oh, if I could do this, you know, this is what I would do. But I want to hear what everyone else
says. Yeah, that'd be a heck of a lot more interesting. I'd definitely be game to try it under that light.
Yeah. So we'll throw that up, probably after this podcast drops, and we'll go from there. But like we said, we're about at an hour here. Thank you so much for listening. I am Matt from High Prairie Sportsman on the Foul Front Podcast, and my co-host Thomas from Hoke Outdoors. Check out our YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, TikToks, other social medias. TikTok. Oh, okay. Well,
I'm boycotting TikTok.
That's a fair boycott, actually. That is all we have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
See ya.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.